Flint, Michigan. How did a simple flip of a switch lead to a long-term public health crisis that tested the resilience of its residents? In this Science of Crime podcast series, we will examine the chain of events that led to years of damage, distrust, and dirty water. My name is Sam Reardon, and this is episode number 2 of my podcast, Investigations. Picture this. Your city, the place you live, work, see friends, and raise your family, suddenly becomes plagued by toxic water. At first, it doesn't seem like a big deal. You just think to yourself, okay, I won't shower for the next few days. I'll just drink from some plastic water bottles I have. Well, it's been 6 years, and the water still isn't 100% safe. People have died, children have been poisoned, and you see crime rates rising. So now what? A large part of the Flint crisis is Legionnaire's disease. Although it is often glanced over, the dangerous disease led to the untimely deaths of many Flint residents, and it is my job to bring light to the unspoken effects of the crisis. I want to start by telling you a story. Actually, I want to start by telling you about the horrific and true last months of Jasmine McBride. I'm currently looking at a side-by-side picture of Jasmine as a child and as a 29-year-old woman. Her smile shines bright, however she looks defeated. I can see the fight left in her eyes, but her body reflects a different truth. After her diagnosis with Legionnaire's disease in 2014, the young woman's life changed drastically. She began to have trouble enjoying her life, walking, and even speaking, but she never quit. She fought like hell, was rehabilitated, and began to put the pieces of her fractured life together. Unfortunately, in 2019, she spent her 30th birthday tethered to an oxygen tank. 8 months later, at age 30, Jasmine died of cardiac arrest. Although her cause of death was written on the certificate to be cardiac arrest, her doctors call her the story of Flint, as she suffered from all the Legionnaire's complications, kidney failure, heart failure, and respiratory failure. Her body could not handle a second fight. Out of the 78 documented Legionnaire survivors from Flint, at least 25 have died in the following months and years. Initially, Jasmine was marked a survivor. She was fully rehabilitated. However, now the extended effects of Legionnaires led to her death 4 years later. Now that you have an understanding of the outcome, let's rewind. What is Legionnaire's disease? According to the CDC, Legionnaire's disease is an infection of the lung that leads to difficulty breathing, respiratory failure, and sometimes death. To simplify it, Legionnaire's is essentially an extremely dangerous type of pneumonia that affects people of all ages, but is especially dangerous for those who are compromised, such as someone who has asthma, is overweight, or elderly. Upon being infected with Legionnaires, the person will begin to experience symptoms pretty similar to the coronavirus, such as a cough, shortness of breath, muscle aches, and head pains. Now, let's dive a little deeper. Where does Legionnaires come from, and how did people in Flint, Michigan get it? Basically, the disease starts with the type of bacterium found in freshwater environments called the Legionella bacteria. The Legionella bacteria can build up in places like shower heads, hot tubs, water features, and even large at-home plumbing systems. Legionella begins to grow when the water source lacks the proper disinfectants, the temperature is lukewarm, the water is stagnated, or even just that the equipment is old or rusted. Once Legionella bacteria have infected the water, it infects the entire freshwater source. Over time, the Legionella grows and multiplies, eventually spreading to the tiniest of water droplets. From that point, people breathe in the small droplets and their lungs become infected with the bacteria. Once someone is infected, the disease will continue to spread through the water source, and it will also spread through that person. Sneezing, coughing, drinking out of the same glass, and living with an infected person all put you at risk of infection. As promised, let's talk about the Flint, Michigan outbreak of Legionnaire's disease, which was the third largest outbreak in U.S. history. The community-wide outbreak affected the Flint area in 2014 and 15. However, doctors and Flint officials did not release information until around 2016 when the infection had subsided, which is why most of the graphs and data you will see say pneumonia instead of Legionnaire's disease. The Emory team, a well-established research group, created a graph relating the pneumonia deaths in Flint to the statewide data in 2014 and 15. Upon mapping their data, they found that pneumonia deaths clustered in the same areas as the diagnosed Legionnaires cases, in Flint. Well, Considering that pneumonia is so similar to Legionnaires and that the Flint officials were trying to cover up an outbreak, it is reasonable to conclude that the documented pneumonia deaths were in fact Legionnaires-related deaths. In the summer months, pneumonia cases and deaths are expected to decrease. However, the Flint, Michigan area experienced the sharpest jump in almost 10 years, indicating that there is something out of the ordinary going on. In just the summer alone, Flint, Michigan had 70 more deaths of pneumonia than expected. As I talked about in the beginning of my podcast, there are several factors that create a positive environment for Legionella, such as stagnant water and poor treatment. In the case of Flint, Michigan, the issue is that the water was not properly treated. Companies often treat their water sources with chlorine to kill microbes, prevent bacterial growth, and especially to prevent Legionella communities from developing. In Flint, after years of research and several experiments, scientists determined that low levels of chlorine in the water are responsible for the outbreak of Legionnaires. Upon switching from Lake Huron to the local Flint water source, Flint officials did not add sufficient levels of chlorine to the water. Scientists at the University of Michigan conclude that Legionella is incredibly sensitive to chlorine. However, when Flint's water source changed to the Flint River, they detected a drop in chlorine levels, which led to a spike in Legionnaires cases. Like me, you may be wondering how Flint messed up the chlorine levels so badly. Well, for one, the Flint officials underestimated the amount of lead in the pipes. Chlorine tends to react with heavy metals, such as lead and iron. As the water went through the pipes, the chlorine levels began to deplete as the chlorine reacted with the overwhelming amount of lead present. Additionally, the chlorine reacted with other metals, including iron, which poses a double risk. Iron promotes the growth of bacteria and also binds to and inactivates chlorine. Because the water's reactions with the metal, the water was no longer properly treated, thus leaving it open to bacteria. The scientists at the University of Michigan stated that in order for Flint's water to be safe, they needed a much higher amount of chlorine than a regular water plant would. The unusual amount of lead and iron in the pipes prevented the chlorine from properly treating to the water, leading to the growth of Legionella in the city's source. To this day, although Flint switched back to Lake Huron, the Legionella bacteria is found in upwards of 25% of all water samples, indicating that the lead and iron in the pipes is still preventing the chlorine from functioning properly, putting people of Flint at risk for Legionnaires' disease once again. I'm happy to introduce you all to a close relative of mine, Dr. James Costanzo. Dr. Costanzo is a UConn graduate who went on to study medicine at UConn Medical School.
Legionnaires' disease is a type of pneumonia, and it's a bacterial pneumonia caused, the name of that bacteria is Legionella. So typically it's called like either an atypical pneumonia. We don't really need to get too much into that, but it's mild, relatively. And so it's a bilateral pneumonia in both lungs. And you also get GI symptoms, so sometimes like watery diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, and then abdominal pain is pretty common.
Okay, and knowing what you know about today's health system, do you think that Legionnaires is a viable threat?
Yeah, so on one hand, Legionnaires isn't very common, right? There's like 10,000 something cases a year. So it's not a threat in that way. Like, it's pretty unlikely for the typical person to get it. But it could be a threat because it's spread in like kind of like these epidemic type pattern. Like a lot of people can get it all at once, and obviously the symptoms aren't very good. You know, like no one wants to have like GI symptoms and like feel crappy and have like a cough and feel like pneumonia symptoms. So I guess it is a threat in that way.
Okay, and then in relation to Flint, do you think that the officials had good reason to cover up the outbreak, or was it unjust?
Right, so again, my understanding is that the officials classified all of the Legionnaires cases just as pneumonia and didn't give more data on that. And like that's technically correct because Legionnaires disease is a subset of or subtype of pneumonia. But so like, you know, it's not bad in that way, but it would be bad because it's helpful to know exactly what types of pneumonia people are having because there's all different types. And again, it's kind of spread in this epidemic type pattern. Like lots of people get it all at once via a contaminated water source that gets aerosolized somehow. So So I think it would be valuable to know that information. So, like, again, the most efficient way would probably be report the total number of pneumonia cases and then give data on, like, the subtypes and how common they were.
Thank you to our special guest, Dr. Costanzo, for coming on the podcast and talking today. And as always, thank you for listening about Legionnaires' disease. Tune in next week for more about the Flint water crisis. Thank you.